happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day.
We're right here, and it is cranking up for political season here today. And we have Brian Ryan Doyle right here with us today. He's running for the 3rd congressional seat on the federal Congress, and he wants to, he has some ideas here, folks, and we're going to be talking about it. He is a Democrat. He is in a runoff with Carson Gaiser, I believe. And so that'll be coming up June 12th. And, of course, the successful challenger there will go up against Congressman Jeff Duncan, correct?
That's correct.
That is correct. So how are you doing today, Ryan Bryan?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks for having me again.
Of course, of course. I always love a challenge. Now, you actually are, you have your own radio show.
That's correct. That's correct.
And what station is that on?
I'm on quite a few. I'm a syndicated, so I do for the Urban Media Broadcasting Networks. And it's a challenge because you get to hear people in different necks of the woods. So you get to see and hear the needs and concerns of people all across the country, Georgia, South Carolina, D.C., Philadelphia, Ohio, Chicago. So you get an adverse Jackson, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana. So you get to hear, you know, a different mixture of what's going on in people's communities and what's affecting them in their communities on a local level, but not only a local level, a national level, too.
Now, you live here in Greenwood now. You ran for this office
two years ago.
Right. And what made you want to come back to the table and run again?
Well, I just believe that we haven't done anything that needs to be done for the 3rd Congressional District. And you know, I would hope that people would take the mindset and take a minute and stop and say, what have we gotten here in the 3rd Congressional District that's moved us forward in education, moved us forward in jobs, that's brought us closer to a free energy, or that's just reached out to help the working class citizens?
The working class citizens,
well,
yes.
The working class citizens, meaning, you know, everybody.
Sure. And what the let's take education first. What do you believe about education, that it should come from the federal government, or is it a state issue?
Well, it's a state issue, of course. But I don't believe, and I will never support privatizing our public schools. I just won't do it.
Okay.
But
they are public schools here in the state of South Carolina.
They are.
Right. And
but for 8 years. You know, in the state house, Jeff Duncan has done nothing but wanted to see public schools abolished and go into a private or charter school system. My thoughts with that is like with the post office. You're not going to get people, you know, privatizing something that the state has a handle on handling and fixing. When you privatize it, people for profit, they're looking for a profit. There's no profit in education.
Okay, but. It's a state issue. It's not really a federal issue. So if we're talking about the federal side, since you are going for the Congress seat in our U.S. federal government, how would you vote? Would you be voting to support more controls coming down from the federal government into the state government?
I would not. And I would not support No Child Left Behind, which has always been No Child Caught Up. It has been the worst situation. And it's funny that you laugh because Senator Hillary Clinton on my own program does the same thing when I say the same thing. No child left behind is no child caught up. So I think the federal government should take their hands off and let the states control it a little bit better and work on it to fix it. I mean, we're number 47 in the country. It's awful in South Carolina.
Absolutely it is. It is.
You know, for you to pay your car taxes, me to pay my car taxes, I have two cars that I pay $600 each on.
Yeah, you look like you're doing okay out there, Brian. There.
Well, I'm talking enough.
No, you're talking enough. Okay.
So, you know, we're paying a lot of money.
Yes.
I mean, I'm paying a lot of money with only one child in public school, and I'm paying way more than my share, hoping to help my fellow citizens' kids be educated, only for them in the state to be 47. We've got to do something about that.
I think one of the biggest problems in education is if you don't capture them in that kindergarten, first, second, third grade, you've lost them.
That's true.
Is the biggest problem. And that doesn't seem something that we do that well as far as getting them. But if the issue is to remain a state issue, should there be, I think, some of the problems we've had with the state, with the federal government, is bringing down a program that was a year program or a two-year program, then these grants run out, and then the state is mandated to keep this program going, whether it is a program that the state even thought was a good program.
Well, that's true. I think the states have to recognize what you want to dig in the cookie jar and take out and when you want to keep your hand out of the cookie jar. I think
some
the state,
of these issues that the federal government hasn't given you the option.
Well, that's true.
To take the money.
That's true. There's been some, but there's been a lot here that this state superintendent has not reached in the cookie jar to get.
That's
now,
right.
Do I support those? Some of them I do, and some I don't. I'm a very different Democrat than most, but I do believe that the state should have control of that. But when the state starts hollering about privatizing, then, you know, I don't see any reason why the Fed shouldn't step in. I'm just going to, you know, otherwise, if the states can run their baby and educate our kids, I'm fine with it. When they start getting to this thing about we're going to privatize the schools and they should be going to private schools and we're going to
start. Isn't that just given, actually, haven't they just said that that should be an option, and the same with the charter schools and the same with the online schools, that what they're saying is that children learn at different levels and different rates and that they should be given the option to work at different schools based on that, and not everybody should have to be in a set track?
Well, that's true. But some of the charter schools that you find, you have to, they're subsidized. You
mm-hmm.
have to pay incentive, you know, on top
sure.
of the charter to get your kid in. And to me, that's a disadvantage for some of the kids that parents may say, well, hey, I might really want to send my son or daughter to a charter school, but I don't have $200 a month to kick out to help fund them to be able to go to that school.
But
that's
when
I have a problem.
Thing, but we have the same thing when we go to prep schools or we go to college. We have public institutions and we have private institutions.
But those are options.
Yeah,
I mean,
right,
I
exactly.
took an option to go to Texas A&M. I took an option to go to Kaplan, the law program, which versus me going over to the state school or
right?
South
sure.
Carolina State or some other school. So those are options.
Sure.
But when it comes to the taxpayers' money.
Are you saying that you believe that if there are the options for students to go to privatized, as you say, or charter schools, that then the public schools will suffer? Is that actually what you're saying?
I believe slightly they will, because they would lose funding. They would lose some of the funding. You're pulling a child out, you're going to lose funding. One of the things when I came here 2 years ago and sat down with you that I was upset with, I saw a lot of charter schools that were going out grabbing these kids that were somewhat borderline trouble in the public schools,
mm-hmm.
bringing them into the charter school, getting this $5,000, only to keep the child a month or 2 months and then kick them out of school. And they've already got the $5,000. That's where we, you know, where we have to
draw
the
line. Is that the federal government here? Is that the federal government program there?
Well, no, that's a state program. So what I'm saying
okay,
is,
but see, Ryan, I don't think you really have a position on. You can have a position on it, but the bottom line is, what happens in the state when you become that? What you can do is look out and certainly not put more onerous controls on the state for education.
That's
if
true.
You are running in this office for U.S. Congress,
I would give the states the flexibility, but when we cross certain lines. And you know where I feel on those, then I think we'll step. I don't see any fit for us not to step in and say, hey, wait a minute, you're going a little too far
right.
with this.
Okay. So you believe the federal, I think I could summarize, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you believe the federal government does not have a place in education, that should be states' rights.
That's correct. And but we should be the overseer. Yeah.
The overseer.
You know,
do you think we need that huge Department of Education we've got up there spending all our money?
No.
No.
I've always said that could be reduced greatly. But I think we should have a regulatory agent. And you know, some people say, well, we don't want big government regulation. But we have to understand that if we get folks like Jeff Duncan, you know, who spent 8 years in in the state house wanting to just privatize and get rid of school teachers.
Okay, he's on the federal level now.
But when he was on the state level, he wanted to do that. As a state representative for 8 years down at the state capitol, that's all he was preaching. Let's privatize, privatize, privatize. It scares me half to death if we have more like him that want to privatize, privatize, then you're going to see some federal regulation. Because you make the tables unbalanced. We're in a very difficult time here in South Carolina because, especially our district, mm-hmm. we've lost so many manufacturing jobs.
Exactly.
And I say this because, you know, I remember in Aiken, of course, we had all the Graniteville companies.
Yep.
Here you guys had a ton of manufacturing. Anderson had a ton of manufacturing. Only to have people that have worked 25, 30 years in these manufacturing jobs who didn't even have high school diplomas.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of walked into it, or GEDs, to only be laid off with their plants going over with the North American and Central Free Trade Agreements to these third world countries where they're working cheap labor, and now they can't even find a job. So what are we doing? We're either supporting them through unemployment or we're supporting them through some other chain of welfare assistance or disability assistance, when in fact that we've got to get a grip on our education so that the next generation is competitive both on the national and international level.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But, again, is that a state issue?
It's a state issue. But
do you want to run for the state house here?
I don't. No, thank you. There's too much mess up there. No, thank you.
All right. Hey, we're here with Brian Doyle. He is running for the 3rd Congressional District of South Carolina to the U.S. Congress. We are going to be taking your questions. If you've got a question for Brian, just give him a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors and be right back. We got a lot to talk about. I got to move him on, folks. We're going to be talking about education all afternoon. Hello!
There's nothing can hold me when I hold you. It feels so right, it can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
That's right. We're right back here with Brian Doyle right here on Meet Me at the Diner. He is running for U.S. Congress, Congressional District Number 3, which is, of course, part of this. It also covers Anderson, Edgefield, Greenwood, Lawrence, McCormick, Oconee, Pickens, Saluda, and approximately half of Aiken County. So you will, of course, have a runoff or primary on June 12th.
Don't forget Greenville. We have a piece of Greenville
now. Piece of Greenville.
And we've lost Aiken.
Okay. So none of Aiken?
None of Aiken anymore.
Okay.
Joe Wilson has all of Aiken.
Okay.
We have a piece of Greenville and two counties in Newberry.
Okay.
Two townships.
Two townships
in
Newberry.
Yeah, that belongs to us.
That makes it tough, though, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of
this is the biggest district out of all. When I learned over there, they only have Greenville and Spartanburg. It's
mm-hmm.
two counties they were running in. I said, wow, that's beautiful. We have all this territory, and I'm running across town, across country. I'm already at 10,000 miles. I got a new car. I got the car with 200 miles on it. I have 5,000 something now within a month and a half. I want to say a month and a half, I've already put 5,000 miles on the car.
Well, you know what happens when you drive it off the lot.
Well, it loses its value, I know. And it's an American car. I was being nice this time buying an American car.
Well, you know, support American jobs.
That's
right?
Correct.
Exactly.
I did that, the infrastructure.
Yep, we need more of that. So we just had a question come in. Let's see, Penny Chandler says, do you think there should be statewide or nationwide school funding or standard? Local certainly doesn't equal schools. We certainly do. I mean, I think she lived down at Mount Pleasant. I believe she now lives in Saluda. And she says the schools are much different than, I guess, the schools down in Mount Pleasant might have been better schools than what she's seeing there in Saluda. What is your answer to this?
Well, my answer to that is clear. We have to get on a standard. We've got to give teachers the tools and resources they need to educate our kids. And we've got to stop dictating to teachers what they've got to do with this standardized textbooking or standardized teaching to tests or teaching to pass tests. I've always said here in the 3rd Congressional District that I would get with the local leaders of my schools in my district, get the kids out of the textbook, get them on computers, you know, laptops for students 8 through 11, which is easy to do, costs a parent about $15, $20 for the whole school year, because the school would buy these, get these computers in bulk from Dell, IBM, some of the other guys. Get our kids into the 21st century of education. We are way behind, not only here in South Carolina, but across this country on an educational level. That's why the Japanese, the Chinese, the Indians are all dominating us in education, because we still want to teach out of these crazy textbooks when we need to get our kids into a revolution of education and a 21st century education. So I do believe there should be a form of standardized portion that we look to, but we have to let the teachers be free to do what they need to do to teach kids. Just because, you know, five of us read out of the same textbook doesn't mean all five of us get it. So I think the teachers got to have that freedom. These people are educators. They've gotten the training, the experience, and they specialize in certain areas, whether it's science, math, social studies, or history. And I believe that we need to take the cuffs off of the school teachers and let them work. And I can say that there'll be no school teachers laid off in South Carolina, not only in my district, but in any district, because we're not in a position to be laying off school teachers at an education level of 47. If we're number one or number two in the country, then I would say, oh, okay, we got too many school teachers. These school teachers are too educated.
Well, what if we have teachers that aren't up to standard, shall we say, on being able to teach the subject?
Well, then they need to go.
Well,
it's simple. We're not going to make the kids suffer. Then they need to go, because we're paying them to educate our kids. So if they can't properly educate them, they need to go. Absolutely.
Sure. And I think that is one of the things that Zeiss has been working on, is coming up with a way to standardize, shall we say, the teachers to be sure that they are teaching to a level and having that capability, rather than being a, I'll use the word grandfather, that's not the right word, but I've been here five years, therefore whatever
true.
I do is okay.
Well, and I know we want to move on to other things, but I have five states in my radio listening area out of 16 states and 32 stations. I have five states where school teachers have helped kids pass standardized testing, and they're in a lot of trouble. And I think if we take the cuffs off of school teachers and let them teach our kids, we'll get a better solution. We got to get out of these textbooks. Some of these textbooks are the same ones that we saw when me and you were in school.
I think one of the big problems, though, Ryan, is the fact that we have so many regulations and we have teachers spending so much time doing paperwork just to prove that they've done this, this, and this, just like every other thing that we have going. Regulation seems to be killing a lot of things, not only education, but business, because we have too many regulations.
I agree. I've always been for a little bit more freer society. I think me and Ron Paul have a lot in common when you get to some free issues in certain areas. Now, certain areas, I'm kind of steep. And, you know, one of the things I could appreciate with Republicans and Tea Party members, I'm like a Chris Christie kind of guy. I shoot it straight. If I like what you say, I'm going to support it in what part I support it in, and don't mind voting and standing up for it. If I don't like it, I'm going to tell you I don't like it, and the reason why I don't like it, and I'll never support it. Simple.
You know, one of the problems that I think we have in our Congress is that we don't seem to be crossing party lines. What I'm hearing from you is that you would cross the line, shall we say, to vote for an item if you thought it was the right thing to vote for.
Absolutely. I've said that before, 2 years ago.
We don't remember that 2 years ago,
okay.
Ryan. Okay.
But clearly, here it is. I have always said that. I've always said I am willing to support it. And you know, I know that Democrats get mad about a lot of things. I'm looking at a fair tax more and more every day, and I know that's something that Democrats just totally dislike. But I see some I see some light in the tunnel. And I ain't going to say I see all the light in the tunnel. Mm-hmm. I do see some light in the tunnel with a fair tax. I do. There's other things that I see light on the side with a fair tax. You know, I see light with some of the lowering the taxes. But, you know, for the one percenters, you know, the taxes do need to be increased right now. We're in a bad time. You know, I always give this story.
Wait a minute. I don't want to talk anymore because we got to hear South Carolina news. When we come back, we can pick up this conversation, okay? But if we start it now, we won't get to finish it. So, hey, everybody, stay tuned right here. If you've got a question for Brian Ryan Doyle right here on WCRS, you give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
From trash to treasures along a country road. Do you love classic country? Do you love to hear the old stuff that nobody plays? Well, we do on Saturday mornings, 9:30 to 12. Yes, it's From Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. You'll be sure to hear songs you haven't heard for ages and remember all the good times you had. So tune in on Saturday mornings to Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. I'm Ann Eller. I'll be there. How about you? On WCRS 1450 AM, 9:30 to 12, and on the internet at WLMA.net. Check it out on Saturday, 9:30 to 12, only on WCRS 1450 AM. Classic country, from trash to treasures along a country road.
Back here at Sharp Passes Gallery. Hey, if you've got a question you want to ask, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We're talking with Brian Ryan Doyle right here. He's running for the 3rd Congressional District of South Carolina. That means that whoever is victorious in the primary on June the 12th, should that primary happen on the 12th?
Oh, it is.
It is?
It is. That's been a sad situation, but that's been... And, you know,
that still is. There still is a lawyer that's bringing that up to the Justice Department, I do believe.
Well, and I think it rightfully should be. And, yes. You know, as I said earlier here today, I would have taken up the fight, but I think the judge would throw me out. And I would only take up the fight because I hate to see 180 Democrats and Republicans who want the opportunity to serve their people being kicked off the ballot. And if anybody knows me, knows that I don't mind suing to get justice for people. In any aspect, and I would challenge and definitely take that issue up because I think the Election Commission and both the Democratic and Republican Party made a huge mistake in not publishing and notifying the people that were running for these seats timely of this new law and new situation. But if I thought for a second that a judge wouldn't kick me out of the court and say, well, you don't have a standing, I'll call up 5 of my lawyers that I deal with on a daily basis and say, go file. And, you know, let's get these 180 people on the ballot as soon as possible. I really would do that.
Well, I think several of them are planning to run as independents.
And petition candidates.
Right, exactly. So yeah. We'll see how that works out. But you, of course... want to go to Washington, D.C.
Right. And you know, going to Washington, I want to say this to all the listeners, and I hope that every listener that's listening today will go tell 2, 3, 4, 5 people. I am not going to Washington with the ideology that I need to be there 4 more years or 2 more years and 2 more years. I'm going to Washington to handle the people's business for those 2 years. If the people see fit for me to come back, that's fine. If not, I'll go back and sit at my desk and talk on the radio, you know, doing the same thing you're doing here, and I'm sitting on the opposite side this time. But I'll go back and talk on my radio.
Right?
Oh, it's not fun. It's not fun. You know, it's not fun. And I often tell people when they come in, you know, I'm interviewing them, oh, you're headed for the hot seat, and now I'm in the hot seat. So, it's not fun. But really, I think the biggest issue that we have, and I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, at the end of the day, these guys and gals that are going to Washington have the ideology that I'm here now and this is my seat for as long as I want it to be in. That's not true. And until we as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents get the mindset to say,
we the people,
say, you know what, we send you there and we can send you home, then these people are going to do what they're going to do. That's why they can't get along, because, you know, there hasn't been an aggressive enough approach. Now, the aggressive approach has come through the Tea Party. And I'm quite appreciative of the Tea Party. I think the Tea Party and I maybe disagree on about three things, hardcore disagree. Mm-hmm. I mean, where we just don't see any light at all. But beyond that, I'm very appreciative that the Tea Party has folks standing on their heels or on their tippy toes. Because otherwise,
are holding their feet to the fire,
because otherwise we're going to have all these people that just go and serve 20, 30, 40 years and do nothing. Jeff Duncan, he rode the big Tea Party wave, and he made all these promises. I went to three Tea Party debates, the only candidate to go to Tea Party debates and debate. And let me tell you, the Tea Party members that were there were quite civilized. I think we disagreed on three different things.
It wasn't
as like you see them on TV, you know, like, you know, they're going crazy or, you know, you're in some zoo. But they were very civilized, and I think we disagreed on maybe three topics, three issues.
And what are those three issues?
Well, one of those issues is abortions.
Okay.
And I believe, my personal belief, because I am a Christian, I believe that you really should not do that. You really shouldn't take a life. At all. And I believe in that sincerely and cold-hearted. I do believe that women have rights. And I do believe at the end of the day, you can't get to heaven for me and I can't get for you. Because if that's the case, I'd go get my grandmother and I know I'd be guaranteed a spot in heaven because she's as saved as they come. So, you know,
she's a saint and you're not. Yeah,
if I had to depend on my grandmother, then I'm in heaven. I have no issues. I'm going to go.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, I have to die for my own sins and my own transgressions just as well as you do, and the next person does. So what I believe is that I'm not going to tread on a woman's rights. I think she has the right to decide. But where me and the Tea Party draw a huge line, or as they say, we part the Red Sea, is that I do not believe under any circumstances that a woman should have a baby if she's been raped or incest. I mean, those are two. That's like somebody walking in this door kissing you and me in the mouth, and we didn't ask for it, you know?
Right.
So why are we going to make someone have a baby if their baby's going to be mentally deformed to the extent that it's going to burden the system, and they know prior to that they have a child that has this issue, or that they've been raped by somebody that they didn't want on them at all and got to live 9 months with the idea of thinking about carrying something that you didn't want, you know. Mm-hmm. And then incest, where you may be at a young age, a young child, and, you know, a father or a family member has, you know, violated you, and you got to carry a baby. That is crazy. And that's where me and the Tea Party draw a deep line in the sand.
All right, next issue where you draw the line with the Tea Party. You said there were three.
Well, another issue with the Tea Party is that I think that they take the approach to handouts. You know, you scream about handouts, and we can't have it both ways. And I agree in a lot of areas. I think if you're a taxi cab owner or you own a pizza parlor and you only have three pizzas going out, there's no sense in having 10 cars outside delivering three pizzas. And that's why I say we do need less government. We need to trim off about 25% of our government. 20-25% of our federal government. So we're in agreements there. Now, some of the entitlements that they want to get rid of and do away with, I'm totally against. I think we can reduce those, and we can start regulating people to say, if you're on welfare, you're only going to be able to get welfare X amount of time, and then you got to get your butt out and go get a job. Or we're going to say, if you're going to stay on welfare 5 years, then within those 5 years, we'll give you an opportunity to go down to the tech school and get an education so that you can get a job.
They have started an education with working with workforce where people that are on welfare that are able-bodied and do not have children at home have to get out and get a job.
Perfect idea.
Absolutely.
It's the same as I said, we're spending $20 to $30 million a year housing young men for child support and women, housing them in the county jails. when at the end of the day we lock them up because they owe $1,200 or $2,000 child support, why they're sitting in jail. People don't know this. Go down to your county clerk's office and ask the county clerk. While they're sitting in jail, their child support is still running,
sure.
Only to get out of jail 4 months, 6 months later, to stay out 3 months and come right back to jail for the child support that when they were sitting in jail.
Okay.
If we educate these people, we could send them to tech school, and they can get a trade for $800.
I think it might be more than that.
$1,200.
But anyway.
And if they don't, if we educate them and they don't get out and get jobs, then we need to send them to state prison. We don't need to keep them down at our county jail.
Okay, so we got abortion. We've got, what was issue number two?
Well, entitlement.
Entitlements, okay. And number three.
And the third issue is taxes.
Taxes.
I believe
you don't
that,
think we're taxed enough already?
Well, you know, you and I are in a different tax bracket, pretty much, than some. And I feel as though we may feel that we pay our fair share in the areas where we pay. And I'm just being honest. I'm a pretty honest guy when it comes to being fair to all people. Now, I don't believe in some of this stuff you hear where you need to take from me to give to the poor or give to someone else. You know, you're going to take from one and give to the other. I think we have to make sure that the playing field is level for everybody, and it's not. We know that it's not. But to tax us in a lower tax bracket than we do somebody's making $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, I have a huge issue with that. I really do. Because my tax bracket is slightly a little bit lower than some other people because I'm over the 200,000 mark. I mean, I'm not going to give my exact pay number, but I'm over the 200,000
mark. Well, we could probably find it out. You had to file all these papers in you, Ryan.
So, you know, I feel as though
so are you for the Buffett rule then? You think we should tax them a higher rate?
Well, I'm not going to say a higher rate. I think that we're in a crisis. The country's
okay.
In a crisis.
Sure.
And when you're in a crisis, we have to come outside of the box to get ourselves out of the situation. China's going to own us in 2018, 2020. I mean, we're going to have so much debt with China, it's going to be ridiculous. So you do have to move those making more than $200,000 a year up and into a different bracket. And then those making over $1 million a year has to come out of the box and get out and do their fair share too. You know, one thing I've always learned, and I have a few rich friends, not me, but a few rich friends, they don't spend much. You know, they're very conservative in how they spend. So we're not getting a lot of taxes out of them.
But what do you think about the very fact that a lot of employers are not going forward with expansion or with the health care issues, the regulations that are coming down on businesses, what we're dealing with oil and gas and all these regulations coming down? Why would you expand your business?
Well, I think that's a twofold. I think that's a two-parted fault. One part, I believe, is that it's an issue to damage the president. I'm just being honest.
Okay.
I mean, he's done some decent things, and, you know, there's a lot more improvement that need to be done. And you know, somebody's got to hold his feet to the fire on doing the things that he said he was going to do. But he's had a rough time because the Republicans are just voting no, 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 no. I mean, we learned in a book just
and
a few weeks ago.
The Democrats are voting yes, yes, yes. Well, wonder they don't get anything done.
Well, that's true. But it goes back to letting these folks believe that these seats are theirs and that they can stay forever. You know, we need to break this party chain, you know, malarkey, where you got folks that just, you know, vote with their party or be held hostage by their leaders in their party. You know, you have to have the attitude that I come here to do the people's business, South Carolina. One thing folks in South Carolina can rest assured when I'm elected is that I will be doing South Carolina's business. I won't do like Jeff Duncan did. First piece of legislation he sponsored was drilling in the Gulf. Drilling in the Gulf ain't going to bring jobs to South Carolina. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to be concerned about folks here in South Carolina. And then after I take care of my people at home, it's just like taking care of your house. You take care of your house first before you go outside the house.
Yeah, but we get away with all those earmarks and all that stuff that would help bring stuff right here to South Carolina.
Well, you know, when you look at our district and our state, we have great dynamic folks in representation. And when I say that, I don't mean what they're doing. I mean name recognition. We have Lindsey Graham,
yes,
who's quite on TV all the time.
Sure.
We have Jim DeMint,
yep,
who's a Tea Party favorite, Republican, you know, hierarchy. And we have Jim Clyburn, who is a Democrat who's been the majority whip and has, you know, a great influence.
Right.
Why is South Carolina suffering so bad? Why are we falling out of all the states? We're somewhere in the mid-30s. Something's wrong with that picture. I'm going to take care of South Carolina first.
How can you take care of South Carolina?
Well, there's a lot of things that we've got to do. We've got to look at, we're a unique state, and that's why I say about my opponent being in this race. He's not from the 3rd Congressional District. He's from Charleston and has lived most of his life in Charleston. His parents are from...
Who are we talking about?
My opponent.
Your opponent.
My Democratic opponent.
You're for the primary.
He's not from this area, so he doesn't know the uniqueness of our district. I mean, I'm born and raised here and have been here and know this stretch of the woods. I ran an ambulance service for 15 years, the only black-owned ambulance service in the state as of today, and that was in 1991.
That ambulance running around seeing people. You got a thing on the side of it.
I wish I could. That would be nice, wouldn't it? But this is a unique territory. We're
in
a unique country. When we go back to our manufacturing jobs.
The question is, how can you affect jobs here in South Carolina any better than any of the people that you named?
Well, first, they have not.
We've got DeMint. You've got Lindsey Graham. And then we also have our freshman first congressional.
Jeff Duncan, who's rode the wave. You know, I got this new commercial that he's riding this big kahuna wave coming in, and it lands on shore, and he does nothing.
Well, you know, but we also have Trey Gowdy from up there in Greenville. You've got Mulvaney. You've got a whole group, Joe Wilson. You've got a whole group. So.
Oh, yeah, and I left out Joe because Joe's very popular, too.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Those four are very popular.
Okay, so my question to you is, how can you affect getting jobs here to South Carolina any better than president or our own representatives right here?
Well, first we have to review our North American and Central Free Trade Agreements. That's what has dominated us. That's what's pulled the most jobs out of our district.
They're coming back, Ryan.
Well,
I don't think even if you change things, I don't think they would come back.
Well, that's true in part and not true in part. There's a lot of companies, and I served on a board for one a while back when I came in last time, that ships their stuff directly from overseas directly into their stores.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to, if you're going to do business overseas, then, you know, you've got to have some foundation of manufacturing, an assembly plant here in the United States for when your stuff comes in,
mm-hmm.
versus it just going direct from the door of Dominican Republic or Mexico to the direct door at the mall.
Sure.
We need to regulate that. But when we go back and look at our North American Central Free Trade Agreements and then investing in infrastructure, you know, I'm not for throwing a whole bunch of money out in infrastructure, but, you know, if we fix our roads and our bridges and do some of those things,
and
we have some locals.
We
have some locals that can qualify to do those jobs. There's a lot of people that can really do those jobs who are not as highly educated. You're not going to get a huge production of companies. I remember when BMW came to Greenville, one of their things was that we've got to have people at
a higher education level.
The
same thing when Boeing came in.
That's
Boeing
correct.
Has been a big plus for the state.
And so what we've got to do is we have a group of people that worked in our manufacturing in industry area that were not educated, and they were baby boomers for the most part. I mean, I had an uncle who worked 35 years at Graniteville Company, only for Graniteville to close their doors, and
sure.
He had nowhere to go because he didn't have an education. Just recently got his GED about 3 or 4 years ago. So we've got to create jobs that will meet the needs of those people, because that's really the backbone. Because, once again, those people like you and I that are over that $200,000 bracket,
mm-hmm.
we're not really energizing and spending a whole bunch of money going back in.
I am spending a lot of money, okay. Just for the record here. I spend a lot of money.
Mine is mostly in buying a new car. I have to say. I think my biggest share is getting a new car. But
you have a point about getting the type of jobs in here. But the question is, and this relates back to immigration, how do we get those type of jobs here, or How do we get people to take the jobs that we have a lot of illegals doing that could be jobs for people that need the jobs?
Well, I think, you know, in those areas, people that are desperate and in need for work are going to work. And those that don't want to work and want handouts are going to stand out for handouts.
I mean, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, Ryan, who said, I can't afford to come work for you. I make more sitting at home.
Well,
I have had people tell me that.
But, you know, that goes back to the point that we have to put regulation on how long we allow people to use the system as far as, you know, unemployment. You know, if people are actually looking for work, then we, you know, the unemployment, they've paid into it. So that's what it's there for. But when, you know,
99
you look at
99 weeks worth?
Well, you know, once
that's
again,
on the federal level, 99 weeks
well,
there.
Well, once yes. again, we're in a bad situation in this state.
Sure.
In this state alone. And I believe that, you know, we got to do something about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And they are. That's true. There are a lot of jobs that I don't think other folks, American folks, would take. But when it boils down to the at the end of the day and it boils down to taking care of your family and you not being able to get the handout, you're going to take care of your family. We can reduce crime across the state. I hear from so many people where their doors are being kicked in and people are violating their property, coming in, stealing. You know, I had that happen to me in my D.C. place when I'm in D.C. Somebody kicked in the door. I was gone. And came in and just helped themselves to a lot of stuff. So we've got to take that approach.
So how do you, as a U.S. congressman, how do you address these issues? I mean, we can talk all day.
I have to get on the road, go to the corporations, Dell, various corporations, Sony.
I mean, we've got an Amazon here.
Okay, go to Dell. It took a huge fight to get Amazon in here.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was
awful.
It almost
left.
That was so awful.
Yes.
And, you know, and so we've got to, you know, we've got to get, our elected officials have to get on the road and start getting folks and saying to folks, we've got to bring jobs to our people.
Well, what do you think? I mean, actually, is that a job of the of a U.S. congressman to get those jobs
absolutely.
Here? Or is it the job of our governor and and our Department of Commerce here in the state?
Well, it's a job. If I'm representing folks in my state and in my district, I'm going to, you know, it may be sad for me to say this, but I'm concerned about the third district. Everything else outside of the third district, well, you know, you come second. The third district comes first. I'm going to make sure. And that's what amazes me with people like Jim DeMint and Lindsay and Joe Wilson is that, you know, if I had the clout that they had and had the time they had in, there'd be nothing that, you know, I wouldn't care about what goes on outside of my district. My district would be taken care of. And I can say that, and I'm saying that boldly. My job is to represent those 10 counties that I represent and bring the needs to those 10 counties. Not handouts, mm-hmm. but bring the needs to those 10 counties to make the people in these 10 counties feel comfortable. And if that means me bringing it from a federal level and then going down on the state capitol, raising sand with those elected officials down there to make change so that we can make it happen as well, that's what I've got to do because I've taken that oath to represent those people in the third district.
Okay. All right. Well, we are almost out of time. Believe it or not, we have had such an energizing and engaging conversation. We have run out of time. So, in the 2 minutes that are left here, what would you like the people to know about you, Brian Ryan Doyle?
Well, I am a fair guy. I believe in serving the people, Democrat, Republican, or independent. Doesn't matter to me.
Libertarian.
Put
those in there, too.
A Green Party. Doesn't matter to me. I believe that we have to do what's viable and feasible for our district first. Our district is most important because you're the voice for your district,
mm-hmm.
and if your district didn't have a voice. So I welcome everybody to go to my website, www.briandoyle4congress.org, and look at some of the stuff, look at some commercials, different things on there. Call me. They can call me. I answer the phone.
What's your telephone?
My number is 1-888-208-6739.
Okay.
I answer the phone. I think my extension is 704. We answer the phone, and we talk with constituents. That's 1-888-208-6739. And we talk. And we want folks to understand that this election is not about me. It's about our district, our kids, our future, our Social Security, our jobs, our health care. That's what it's about. And we need a leader who wants to go to Washington, who does not have the mindset that going to Washington, I'm supposed to stay in Washington. You're supposed to go there, do the people's business, and come home. Now, if you can't do the people's business, then the people need to send you home. We shouldn't have folks sitting there because, oh, they're a Republican and I'm a Republican, or oh, they're a Democrat and I'm a Democrat. We should have people there that's able and willing to handle the people's business.
Absolutely. Well, we have been talking with Ryan Doyle. He is running, as I said, for 3rd Congressional District. His website is www.briandoyleforcongress.org. Check it out. And, of course, if you'd like to give him a call, 888-208-6739. You've been listening to me, Ann Eller, right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. Ryan, good luck.
Thanks so much. You know, I'm looking forward to you. You know, I'm walking out, knocking on doors, talking to people. I'd love to have you out. I'll get that endorsement, and I'm on my way.
Well, hopefully you've got the primary coming up on the 12th, right?
That's correct. Primary on the 12th.
And maybe we'll be able to have you back for the final for going forward to November 6th.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much for coming out today,
Thanks
Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Hey, give me a little break here. I'll be back with Happy Hour in just a few moments. Don't you go away.